outside. We couldn't see it from our vantage point.
And welcome to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. This is episode number 19, February 20th, 2017. Glad to be back with you. I, of course, am Joe Murata. This is Mr. Michael Quinn. How you doing today, Michael?
Howdy doody.
Howdy doody to you.
Back for another episode.
It's nice to be back, isn't it?
Yeah.
Miss talking about the retro wrestling with you.
19 already?
19.
Okay, so now the age is going up on this podcast?
The age is going up.
Once again,
cigarettes now.
Is it 19 or I thought it was 21 now.
Here in Jersey, it's 19.
Are you sure?
I don't know about some other places.
Well, we'll have
Germany
to see.
Germany or
we'll have to look
12
that
in Germany.
Yeah, Germany.
Yeah, Germany.
Remember when wrestling was in Germany?
Yeah,
like,
remember
Brent
that?
Loved it so much.
You know, my fans in Germany.
He really liked the international fans more than anyone else.
I think they liked him more, too.
I think so, too.
Anyway,
but, yeah.
We're here on the Retro Wrestling Podcast. Next week, Quinn, did you know this? That's our season finale.
Wow.
We're closing out February next week, and we're closing out season two.
I wonder what the cliffhanger on that finale will be.
We'll have to find out.
Yeah, we'll have to
find out. But anyway, folks, we are here in episode 19, February 20th. Hope you're having a good Monday so far, wherever you might be. One place we be, Quinn, is the place to be.
Oh, we're in the place.
We are in the place. It is a beautiful place.
It's the best place for the human race.
Does that
rhyme?
No. Yeah, no, it does. It does.
Yeah, okay.
It rhymes.
What's its real tagline?
I have no idea.
No,
oh,
yeah.
The place to be, you mean?
Yeah,
I thought you meant the human race's tagline.
No, not the human race. We don't have a tagline.
We should. That is the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Okay.
And if you aren't listening to us on that place, go on and check it out. Some great podcasts there.
Yeah, some great stuff.
Some great stuff.
Extracurricular wrestling activities.
Perfect, Quinn. That's very, very good.
That's our new catchphrase for place to be.
That's right. I love that. We got to tell Brad about that
okay.
one. But Quinn, we're not just in that place. Where else are we?
We're also on the iTunes, and you could leave us a review on the iTunes specifically.
Yes, that'd be awesome, actually.
Yeah, so that helps us grow.
Mm-hmm,
and,
it does.
You know, get the word out to maybe your friends or something.
Friends and family.
Yeah, they might look on the iTunes and see it.
Yeah.
There's also Google Play Music.
That's right, yep.
Stitcher.
Yeah, Stitcher.
FM player.web, whatever.
Who cares?
Yeah,
exactly.
That.
Yeah.
And Blueberry.
And Blueberry.
Yeah.
We love Blueberry.
Yeah.
It's
been
it
a long
time
since the Blueberry's gotten the who cares.
It will eventually.
Okay.
Whatever Gorilla decides to do.
Okay.
I don't really make these decisions, you
right?
know? It's all Gorilla.
I don't know what he's doing back there.
I'm not sure it's legal.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's legal. He wouldn't think any of this is legal.
No, not at all. You can also find us, of course, on the Twitter at OVP Podcast.
Right.
And if you use this archaic form of communication, we have the email.
Right.
Which is ovppodcast@gmail.com. One more time, that would be ovppodcast@gmail.com. Quinn, we have a web presence somewhere.
Yeah, we are present on the World Wide Web. You can go over to ovppodcast.com.
That's
our
right.
address. It's not like a mailing address, but it's a web address.
We don't have a P.O. box yet.
We don't have a P.O. box there, but you can go over there. We got all this stuff that we do. All these things that we're talking about, there's links to all that there.
Right, and we're also on motionpictures.com. What's it called?
No. YouTube. It's new, Joe, but YouTube.com. There's
right.
a lot of promotional
you
stuff.
You can see what we look like.
You can see us.
Not like
you
it's
can,
exciting, but...
Yeah, you could see the, you know, all sorts of things over there.
Yeah,
little promo spots.
Right. And I understand there's some other thing, some Hall of Fame thing coming
up.
Oh,
yeah.
I heard that'll be coming up soon.
Very soon. There's going to be Hall of Fame bites, I guess we're going to call them. I don't know. But, you know, there's going to be video to accompany that audio.
That's a cool thing about this. Lord Alfred worked it out for us where we're going to do the audio version and the video version.
He got the guys over at the WWF camera crew.
Yeah, they're going to be filming us.
They're pulling it out of the truck, I guess.
Yeah, Kerwin. Will Kerwin be there?
Maybe Kerwin.
Not Kevin Dunn, though.
I banned Kevin Dunn from this place.
He's done as far as we're concerned.
He's out of here.
Thank you.
He won't zoom in and do stupid shit the whole
shaky
podcast.
Shaky cam on us.
Yeah, fuck that shit. What the hell's wrong with that guy?
I don't know.
It's so stupid. Yeah.
So, folks, to start the show, well, actually, Quinn, I think we should do the right thing here, and we have to acknowledge a few sad things.
Yeah.
Not to start the show on a downer, but let's just do that.
Right.
Out of respect here. within the last couple of days, we lost Nicole Bass,
right?
Who was notable for a brief run in WWF, as well as, you know, some other things.
I would say it was a very notable run.
I would say it was notable,
people remember her.
People remember Nicole Bass, definitely.
Definitely a definite memorable thing of the 90s, let's say.
Definitely.
Controversial.
We unfortunately also lost, at age 79, George the Animal Steel.
Yeah.
Iconic figure.
Iconic. And people, everybody remembers George from, you know, WrestleMania 3.
Eating the turnbuckles.
Eating the turnbuckles and the doctor segment and all that. Yeah.
And by all accounts, great guy.
Yeah. Whenever they needed him, he would be there. Team player and Hall of Famer.
Yep. Hall of Famer. And Quinn, you actually told me about this one.
Yeah.
Ivan Koloff.
Ivan Koloff has passed away, age 74.
Former world champion.
The third world champion ever in the WWF. And, you know, a stalwart of the NWA.
Absolutely. This is the guy that not only did he beat Bruno for crying out loud, this is the guy that beat Bruno.
And he broke his leg or whatever.
Broke his leg, big feud. But he, yeah, like you said, also a stalwart of the NWA.
Led the Russians in Jim Crockett Promotions.
Yeah, we just mentioned them last week during that NWA review.
I was a big fan of this guy.
I know you were.
I like his rugged look.
Absolutely.
Definitely a pioneer, you know, he was in the early days.
He was. He was an interesting character and a notable guy. Definite, you know, it's sad to lose so many, you know, names in the business in such a short amount of time.
Right. Yes, definitely.
But I figured we would do our due diligence there, Quinn.
Yeah.
And acknowledge that. But let's start the show in earnest now, for real. It's going to be one thing I miss, Quinn.
Let's do it.
You and I don't really talk about this one much on or off the show.
That's interesting.
So I'd like to get your thoughts here.
Okay.
One thing I miss is there not being as many championships.
Oh, you mean like less championships?
Like less.
Not more
championships. Okay, yeah, I miss when there were less championships. Because back in the, when we grew up, you know, the way we were reared on wrestling.
Right.
You had three, right?
Yeah, there was basically three. Yeah.
I mean, the women's,
but not really.
But you had the World Championship.
Right.
Right. The Intercontinental, which was the secondary.
Mm-hmm.
Secondary.
Secretary.
Temporary secretary.
Yeah.
Secretariat.
I actually met Secretariat.
And, of course, the tag team, Champion Shaw.
Champion Shaw!
Yep.
And that was it.
Yeah. I think not having as many titles definitely made them more prestigious.
It did.
Nowadays, you have like 8 billion titles.
Yeah.
Although, it's more of a recent development that they went back to like a zillion titles, because for a while they were rolling with 4.
Yeah, but you know what? Them having the US and the IC, I never liked that.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Okay. Well, we can discuss, but
yeah,
I always thought the European title was, you know, an admirable addition. Like, it wasn't bad.
In theory, it was a good idea.
Yeah.
But, you know, when Bulldog won, the tournament was whatever. The match where Bulldog won it was awesome.
Yeah,
Owen.
That was good.
It was in Germany, by the way.
It started out good. It went through, like, a lull period, I felt.
Yeah, called Bulldog holding it.
No, well, and Sean getting it for, like,
and
5
Sean
seconds.
And Sean getting it.
Yeah.
And then X-Pac and D'Lo had a good feud
over it. Then it became a regular belt.
And then, though, it didn't matter.
Yeah, but that wasn't very long if you think about it in the spectrum between its, like, founding and, like, D'Lo
like
and X-Pac making it a normal belt.
It was, like, a year and a half.
But, yeah, I do think there is a lot of prestige lost the more titles you have.
I agree.
But I do think you can make it work with a lot of titles, because, like, NWA was doing that.
Yeah, but NWA maybe is one thing, but that's a different ballgame, you know, because there's so many different territories.
Because it's regional, and some of those titles are featured on their own shows and stuff like that.
But the way WWF has been doing it, even before the brand split started again, to have 2 versions of the tag titles, I mean, come on.
Yeah,
really?
That's when it gets a little out of control. The only time 2 versions of a tag title ever worked, to my knowledge, was the USA tag belts.
In WCW, yeah.
But that was because there was 2, like, top-tier tag teams.
Yeah, they had enough tag teams that you can make divisions out of it. Now, you know, it's just, to me, it sounds silly. Each brand has its titles, and I guess you have to, but I'm talking before the brand split even restarted.
Right.
You still had the U.S. and the IC. I always had a problem with the U.S. and the IC coexisting.
In WWF.
Yes.
Don't
you think they should have merged them back then?
Yeah, but they did do admirably. They did get rid of the other secondary titles before they kind of regulated that the U.S. title was in there. Do you remember? Because the European and all this
hardcore was still around.
All this crap.
They had like a million titles.
Right. but that was like before they bought WCW, but instead they, you know, they put them all, it's like Rob Van Dam or something merged them. I forget who it was, but you know, that brought it all back to the US title being like the European title, essentially.
Essentially. I just miss the days of there being these couple of titles.
Yeah.
And if you won one of those titles, you were a big deal.
Right. There's something to say about how important the Intercontinental title was at the time.
Sure. I mean, from when it started, but especially if you talk the 80s.
Right.
I mean, Greg Valentine.
Macho Man.
Santana. Yeah, Macho Man. Honky. You know,
as much as you don't like him, he was treated like a big deal because
he had that title.
He had the Intercontinental title.
For the longest time that anyone did.
Yeah, and Mr. Perfect Warrior. Is another one. Yeah, Warrior.
Bret Hart. Shawn.
Yeah. Those were like the glory days, and
Razor.
I would say it's because there wasn't as many titles.
Exactly.
When those titles changed hands, even the secondary titles, that's the thing. It's like, I felt like once the Attitude Era came, when those secondary titles changed, even the tag titles changed hands, no one cared. That's not to say that the tag title before didn't matter when it changed hands.
I don't know. When do you think that fell down the stairs, so to speak, the tag title?
Well, the tag titles to me are a little dubious because if you notice in the early 80s, that was like the most frequent title to change hands was the tag titles. And then they went into this era when, you know, the Hart Foundation, all those teams were there. That good 80s tag team division
Bulldogs,
that we talked
Foundation,
about. Another,
sure.
Yeah. Then the tag title, all of a sudden, it was like once a year or twice a year it would change hands. Like, it was like, whoa, now this is like important.
Demolition had like a monopoly on it for a while.
Yeah.
And it was like a huge deal when they lost it to the Busters.
Yeah, it was.
And then again to the Colostomy Connection.
Yeah, the Colostomy Connection. Yeah.
The Colostomy Connection.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it's
then three-peating was considered a big deal. Nowadays, you know, if you were a three-time champion, who gives a shit?
Yeah, but you suck.
Yeah, that's not, you have to be like the 17-time tag team champion
right.
with like four partners.
I know. And so, I mean, I guess it's not only a lack of prestige, you know, that bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a combination of the lack of prestige, the more frequent title changes, and the oversaturation of the amount of titles.
Right.
Because it's like, at this point in like 3 years, everyone's going to be getting a fucking participation trophy.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be a world participation championship belt.
Yeah. Now, to your point, though, about this too many titles thing, the real reason behind all this really isn't about, you know, adding titles and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I think it's about the fact that they have a lot of shows.
They have a lot of shows, yes.
They have a lot of shows, and they're separate now. You can't, like, compete for the other one.
Right.
Like, if you think about it, if SmackDown didn't have a tag title, then any tag teams there wouldn't make any sense why the hell they're there.
Okay, like, right, because there's no prized, so like it's just like you have random tag teams, right?
Yeah.
But that's operating under the assumption that everyone's goal is to win a title, which it seems like no one has a goal anymore.
I mean,
they show up and they get yelled at by their boss.
Well,
it's like real life now.
Yeah, now their goal is to one up their boss, which isn't even anyone's goal in real life at work. They just want to go to work and come home and not get fired.
Yeah, just want to go to work, come the hell home, and not think about work.
Do you ever think that's weird with the WWF on a side tangent? That like it's like the face's goal in the company is not to like rise up the ladder, but to rather like antagonize their boss and like make them mad at them. Like, whose goal is that in their company ever? Like,
just,
I don't go to work and be like, I really hope I fuck my boss over today. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's
absolutely.
Just not like anything.
Right. And you should think of titles should be thought of as like a title, like in
a
job. Like, I want the top title.
You want to be the best at what you're in, right? So
exactly.
If you're in the tag team division, you want to be the best tag team. So the only way that you can say you're the best tag team is to have the tag team championship.
Exactly. Like, if you're in collections,
right?
As you want to be the senior collector.
You want to be
like
the best collector.
The manager. Yeah, you want to be the best collector there's ever been.
Right. So in that case, I do think that maybe there's a need for these titles, but on the other hand, it does kind of like, I feel like with the, especially like the tag and the mid-card titles, the fact that they call them like different things just like lessens it, or like different like regions or whatever. Like
regions.
It's like, who is better? I'm dead serious here. Are you the better person if you're the Intercontinental champion, like champion of many continents? Or are you better if you're the United States champion because like US is like where most of the wrestling is happening?
I am the Intercontinental champion!
I never could understand the Intercontinental title in the first place. Is like, are you champion of all the land in the world, but not the ocean?
I see. Like, it's like,
seriously, has anyone ever explained this? Like,
well, if I recall correctly, the fictitious tournament in Rio de Janeiro that Pat Patterson won for the Intercontinental title.
Right, but that's North and South America.
Was
right?
to merge the North and South American, and thus you have the Intercontinental.
Correct.
The title was born in Rio de Janeiro, and that's when Pat Patterson won the North American and South American heavyweight championships. Those championships were then merged and became known as the Intercontinental Championship.
But in the end, like, they really don't talk about that. So, like,
no, they don't talk about anything.
Could you also be like, since that title's been defended in Europe and Australia and Japan and all
Kuwait.
This shit, and Kuwait, technically you're the champion of a couple of other continents too, I would assume, right?
Yes.
So he's kind of the world champion, but only on land. The world champion is, it's vague, so it's like...
It's the entire world.
So it includes oceans, Antarctica, like...
Bermuda.
Yeah,
islands,
exactly.
You know?
Islands.
You know what? I think, honestly, Quinn, the most prestigious title, and it's not around anymore, would be the television title, because you're on all of television.
Yeah, I mean, all wrestling is not... It isn't really on television, but most wrestling is on television.
If you're on television, you matter.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you matter, you're the champion of everything that matters.
Right.
That's the way I look at it.
I don't know. World seems more encompassing to me.
Although what about Universal?
Universal. So is the Universal like the champion of space also?
Yeah, I think so. Like the Milky Way.
Yeah.
And like Orion's
now, what if
belt.
Is that one universe you're the champion of? Like, isn't there other universes?
There's only one universe.
Okay,
the
I'm
WWE
sorry. I'm thinking,
universe.
I'm thinking of solar system.
We're not there yet.
They don't have a solar system champion yet, right?
No, but there might be an intergalactic champion one day.
One day.
Isn't that a video game, intergalactic wrestling?
I think it was.
Baseball or Mike Tyson's punch out intergalactic
like,
version?
Yeah, that's the one where he like looks like he's doing something not so good.
Yeah. Not that Mike Tyson
rounds.
The real person did things so good all the time either.
This is different. This isn't in Mike Tyson's character.
No,
let's
it's not.
It that
Mark
way.
Tyler.
Yeah. Mark Tyler. Yeah.
That's
somebody's
his
calling
name
that
in the game.
Oh my god. Why?
I don't know. Are tangenting here, but Quinn, do you think
we're still talking about titles though?
We are. Do you think that this problem is remedied perhaps if they would just book titles like they mattered more?
I think it would be remedied actually a lot more, besides the obviously that they matter, but they do kind of matter. If they put more of an emphasis on that they're individual to a show.
Okay.
Now, when I say that, I'm saying that you can't call it, for example, the WWE SmackDown Tag Team Championship, right?
Okay.
There should be no WWE in it.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just us. You're the SmackDown tag. Because the WWE is some kind of governing body in my mind, technically.
Yeah,
so it's like...
In your mind.
So if you're, you know, the WWE SmackDown champion, so are you the WWE tag champions on SmackDown, or are you just SmackDown champion? Or, like, what is it?
It doesn't even mean anything anymore. And not that we care.
Not that we care, but there is, like, something to say about, like, they have all these names on top of the belts and stuff like that.
Right.
Like, if you're the WWE United Kingdom champion, are you, like, champion of the WWE, but only in the United Kingdom?
You just, like, won a tournament.
Like, is that equivalent to the world champion?
I know what you're saying.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, like, are the WWE champion of England only? Like, yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, you get it. I mean, people might have to re-listen to this over again just to understand.
And we hope they do.
Yeah, understand the confusion, but
right.
You get where
get
I'm coming
mean.
From.
I totally get what you mean. I also don't really necessarily like the fact that, like, you know, your brand is defined by what night of the week you happen to wrestle on.
Yeah.
So it's
or
like,
if your
you
show's
know.
Live, because technically it's the SmackDown Live test. Wait, what is the Raw show not live now? Because it doesn't say Raw Live and Raw Live Tag Team Champion.
Oh, it's live, pal.
Sorry. Yeah, I know. I know exactly what you mean.
I think the names matter on the belts, honestly, as far as representation is concerned.
It does have something to do with it.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you. I just think there are too many belts. I thought that when they first did the brand split, but I thought that before the first and second brand splits, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
And they didn't treat... God, remember when Dean Ambrose, this is an example, had the U.S. title in 14 or whenever, and he never fucking defended it?
Yeah, like, but that's also when he was, like, Shield Dean Ambrose and, like, who gives a shit?
But that's not a reflection of him. That's a reflection of that their 39 writers can't focus on more than two things at
once. That's another thing. If you got 39 writers, you can't, like, assign one to write for each title.
Right, really? I know.
Like, why did some champions have to sit around and wait for a storyline?
It's ridiculous. All the time that they have, this airtime.
They're always complaining about how we don't have enough airtime, right?
Yeah.
And here we go. They can't even defend all the belts. Like, the belt should be on the line every show when you have 5 hours of wrestling a week or whatever.
Or at least stories pertaining to these titles. But now it's not about the titles. It's about one-upping your boss, like you said.
It's about the boss. It's about humiliating your opponent rather than beating them.
Yeah. Like, sometimes it's about legacies or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's about legacies. I don't know.
Brands.
Like, why do you care about your legacy? Don't you want to be the champion here and now?
That would make your legacy better in the future.
Yeah, by proxy, it would make your legacy better.
By proxy. Well, I'll tell you what, folks. We only have one title, and that title is the fastest-growing weekly episodic retro wrestling audio podcast in the world.
That's true.
And that podcast will be back right after this.
Back after this.
We have a new world champion!
Ladies and gentlemen, the winner of this bout.
No.
This is not surprise. I told you I was going to win the world
championship.
And now I surrender the world
championship
to Ted DiBiase.
Look at all of this crap in this ring.
You're listening to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast, the fastest growing weekly episodic retro wrestling audio podcast in the world.
And welcome back, wrestling fans, to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. Glad to have you with us this Monday, February 20th, 2017. Quinn, you were talking to me during the break here. You brought up an interesting question I want you to tell the folks at home.
You know, we left out when we were talking about all these belts and with the ocean and all this involved. Shouldn't there be an ocean weight champion or something?
Yes.
Ocean heavyweight champion?
Now, do they wrestle in the ocean or no?
I don't know. Like, they could wrestle Aquaman or like manatees or something.
Manatees, yeah.
Like something like that.
Something with sharks or penguins.
Yeah. I mean, it could go on forever. There's champions really of all these regions.
What about the Great Lakes champion?
Yeah, the Great Lakes champion.
The Huron champion.
The African champion. What about the Asian champion?
Antarctic champion.
The Greenland champion.
Greenland!
Well, it's kind of by itself.
No,
up there.
It is. It's up there.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, yeah. Folks, it's time for our next segment, which is What Do You Think Of? Quinn is going to ask me what I think of something. Michael Quinn, what do you have today?
Well, it's actually kind of funny you brought up titles.
Oh, yeah?
Because my topic for today that I wanted to say what you thought of, ask the question, the Hardcore Championship.
Okay, yes.
I was trying not to talk about it in the last thing. But
you did good. You did very good. I loved the Hardcore title for a while there.
Me too. It's actually like, it's up there with the TV title.
It's up there. During a period of time in 99 and 2000.
Right.
It was guaranteed fun.
Yeah, I think it was like the fun title, right?
It was
the
fun
title. It's not
the
technical title or anything like that. But
God, no.
It's the fun title. And we should probably go into a little history about the Hardcore, because it's been long gone now.
It's been long gone. Basically, folks, in November of 98, during the period of time where Mankind was trying to kiss up to Vince.
Right.
Vince, it's me. How did you find me?
I saw what happened. I felt really bad, so I brought you some presents.
He was awarded this broken down world title, which was smashed up, and it had a piece of masking tape on it that said Hardcore.
And maybe we can go into a little bit. I know this might be just an urban legend, but I've heard that it's the belt Mr. Perfect like slammed with a hammer or something like that in Saturday Night's Main Event.
It's an urban legend. It's
never been proven wrong. No, I did look that up.
No, it actually, they have the smashed one is like either on display or in some display case in Titan Tower.
Okay, so
it is.
This is verified.
Yes, like, coincidentally, I was like somehow wandered into this a few months ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because you know, like Reddit and a few other places have some really good like sources.
I know
for
there's
stuff.
Been some debate on this. Like,
it's not it.
You know what though? I want to feel like it's it because in WWE canon,
for
like,
your
can we just
sake,
say
we
it
can
is?
Say it is, but
it makes
not
sense, fine. Right?
So he awarded it to Mankind,
right?
Mankind lost it. I want to say he lost it first to the Big Boss Man, I think.
Right.
And I think Boss Man lost it. Was it to Road Dogg? It was right around that time.
It was to Road Dogg.
Oh, you didn't know?
And Road Dogg was the first fun
hardcore
champion.
That is the time I love the Road Dogg the most.
Me too.
As the hardcore. He was just a plucky, you know, like contender. And like, he, I don't know. It really made him.
Oh, it was so much fun.
Yeah, as like a personality that I like to watch.
Absolutely. And folks, if you don't know what the hardcore title was, basically it was a title that would be contested under hardcore rules. Essentially, anything goes.
Right. Well, hardcore rules, by definition, back then when it was new,
yes,
was that there's no countouts.
No countouts.
No disqualifications.
Right.
And you can win by pinfall pretty much anywhere.
Yeah, it was pretty much false count anywhere.
False count anywhere, right. It's pretty much just a false count anywhere match. It should have, they could have called it the false count anywhere title, but,
yeah,
you know.
It's essentially what it was. They took that one step further in 2000 when Crash Holly won it.
Yes, and this enters my favorite era of this title.
You can talk about it.
The 24/7 rule.
It was on the line.
Now, this rule was... Crash had said, you know, he was kind of thinking himself to be a big guy or something like that. And, you know, he'd always bring that.
He was a super heavyweight.
Yeah, he would bring that scale with him to the ring and all this.
Yes.
So he goes out on a limb and says, this belt's on the line 24/7. I'll defend it at any time. And that works because it's false count anywhere. So it doesn't matter where you are, right?
Yeah. So this led to some hilarious skits.
Yeah. What comes to mind is like the Fun Time America one where he's like, he's in this like New Jersey, like, I mean, people don't know what sports and stuff. Maybe like Discovery Zone. That was national.
Kind of like a Discovery Zone type of deal.
Yeah, and he escaped through a ball pit or something. Yeah. And didn't get pinned.
It was like an indoor amusement park.
Now,
essentially.
Sometimes, if I recall, Crash would lose it briefly in the middle of the match and then
hit
them. Yeah. It would always, basically these segments, they went for a little bit actually, and either Crash would survive or he'd lose it and gain it back most of the time.
Yes, and the gimmick was that as long as the guy that was going to try to win it brought a referee with them to
right.
count the pin.
Yes, that was another thing. Now, I do recall some other stupid hijinks with the 24/7 title. Like, remember the time, like, somebody was, like, asleep or something, and they, like...
Crash was, I think.
Okay, yeah, Crash was asleep, and
yes.
Somebody, like, pinned him while he was sleeping,
mm-hmm.
and then he had to, like, go get him.
Yeah.
Can you imagine getting woke out of a dead sleep? Crash escaped with his hardcore title!
There was one time where referee Jack Doan came in with another referee. I want to say it was Jimmy Corderas.
Yeah.
I can't remember. And Jack Doan takes his referee shirt off.
Yes.
So he's like bare chested.
Yeah.
He tries to beat Crash for it.
Right.
That
I don't think
funny.
He won it, though.
He
right?
didn't,
he
win,
didn't
it.
Win it. Now, there are notable like joke winners like Godfather's Ho.
Godfather's Ho was a winner, yes.
Yeah, I can't.
That's so funny.
Yeah, that is a really stupid
one. It's listed on the title lineage,
yeah,
Godfather's Ho.
She's actually listed. If she has no name, Godfather's Ho is a champion in WWE.
It's true.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Yeah.
I think Molly Holly won it once.
Molly Holly might have, or Jacqueline or one of them, right?
Yeah, so basically, yeah, it was no gender restriction either,
no.
Which was very like... That's not normal either.
Yeah. And of course, famously or infamously, WrestleMania 2000, they had the hardcore title Battle Royal.
Yes.
And basically anyone that won the title within the time limit, I think it
yeah,
was.
Yeah, I think it was like a 15-minute time limit.
Right.
And everyone was in the ring at the same time. And basically, any pinfall that occurred on the current champion...
You won the title.
You won the belt. So this added... I would say at least 15 new champions within 15 minutes.
Viscera, like all sorts of... Probably Pete Gass or
yeah,
one
you're
of them.
Right. Pete Gass did win it. Yeah, that's true.
Pete Gass.
Like, that's... You know, this is the fun part about the hardcore title is the lineage. Like, if we were to read it, first of all, it's super long.
Yeah.
It's like the longest lineage. It's longer than any title. And it's like still this many years later, it's still longer. And it existed for the shortest amount of time.
Like 2.5 years
yeah.
or something like that. It was
yeah.
barely around.
It was just... super fun. I remember at the end of that Hardcore Battle Royal, Hardcore Holly or somebody takes like the King's candy dish and like hits it over
yeah,
someone's
JR's candy dish.
JR's
yeah.
and King's making a big deal about it. He's
yeah.
like, "Your candy dish, JR." Like, that's your candy dish. Like, and that's like how it ends too, if I recall. Like the last, I think Hardcore Holly is the event
yeah.
winner at the very
but
end.
He wasn't supposed to be. There was some kind of botch there with
Wait,
the time
really?
Limit, or Timmy White or one of the refs fucked up. Crash was supposed to retain at the last second when the time ran out, but like Tim White, I think it was Tim White, counted the pinfall.
Right, right.
So like Hardcore walked out with the title, but he wasn't supposed to.
Hardcore! With a bat, he just.
What's funny about that is, like, normally that would be like a you fucked up thing, but it's the fucking hardcore title in a match where, like, Viscera and Pete Gas are winning the belt, so who gives a shit?
A lineage where Godfather's Ho had the title.
Godfather's Ho was a champion, so
it's like, who cares?
It's like, oh, we can just fix that on Raw. And you see, this like, it's a good way to, like, conclude it, sort of, is that the good thing about the hardcore title is that you could, like, just fix anything really quick if, like, something, like, and it was just a lot of fun, right?
It was a lot of fun.
I think it teetered off there at the very end.
I would say its last great moment was the WrestleMania 17 hardcore triple threat match.
That was the last fun one. I wouldn't, there started to be good matches, but yeah, that was the last fun one with the
Raven
with the cart, and he like gets, he almost like broke the power in all of WrestleMania 17. Like, that's actually a true story.
Yeah.
Like,
true story.
He had a cart and he was supposed to drive it in a Big Show or something.
Yes. And it was Big Show and Kane. He was fighting.
Yeah. And so he drives it, but he like fucked up, and there's a lot of fuck ups in the hardcore division.
Yeah.
And he fucked up and he like crashed it by accident near like a cable or something, and he almost like broke the cable, and that was the main power line to the whole show.
Yeah.
Could you imagine if WrestleMania 17, that great pay-per-view, like was stained with like, because Raven broke the power
in like the third match or whatever that was.
That match also had the thing where something with like, there's like windows in like other room, they go through like a wall and all this shit.
It's a fun match.
Yeah, that's probably the last fun match. I do remember near the end, it started to get all serious with Jeff Hardy versus RVD feud for it.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Right around the time of the invasion, right?
Right. Because those two were kind of like the extreme wrestlers from both brands. So it's
extreme.
Like, yeah, but one was true. From ECW and one was WWE's kind of like high flyer, daredevil kind of
when Jeff Hardy was really good.
Yeah, and that made sense.
Yep.
But that's also where it ended. I believe it was unified with the European and Intercontinental title all in like one thing.
I think you're about right with that. Yeah. I know it merged with the European for sure.
I think what happened at that point is the Intercontinental and European were already merged, and then they had a match where the hardcore champion faced the European champion. I think it was Tommy Dreamer was the last hardcore champion.
Good for him.
Yeah, okay, whatever.
Proudly from where, Quinn?
Yonkers. Yeah. I think that's a good end for the hardcore title, because Tommy Dreamer was a, you know, a hardcore wrestler.
He was.
So it's a good way to go out, right?
And it started with Mankind.
Yeah, and it started with Mankind. So, you know, from one ECW guy to another.
Overall, it was definitely a microcosm of the Attitude Era.
Yeah, and it did have its imitators. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we want to go to the WCW hardcore title.
Sucked ass.
It was so bad.
When they first had it, they didn't even have a belt yet. I think like the winner won a trophy or something.
Yeah, and wasn't Brian Knobbs the champion a lot? And
I also, unfortunately,
I also remember, wasn't there some match where they tried to make it really hardcore and they were like surrounded by cars and like burning? Like, it's like, it's basically like the over the top WCW vignette version of a hardcore match.
And it sucked.
It's basically the Cheatham the Midget version of a hardcore match. Like, it's awful.
God, yeah. I mean, Hardcore Hack, that was Sandman. Remember his name was Hack?
Hack. Wasn't Tank Abbott the hardcore champion a bunch
probably.
Too?
Probably.
Yeah.
I feel like Bam Bam Bigelow was
probably involved. I mean, I can't really give you a solid story on that, but it was shitty. And it didn't even look good either. It was too shiny, that belt. Like, it wasn't all like broke. I remember they put fake ripples in it
to make
it look like it was broken, like the hardcore time. It's so dumb.
They couldn't have just broken it.
Yeah, folks, if you're listening with a computer in front of you, just look it up. It's terrible.
Yeah, I that screamed, we're desperately trying to catch WWF.
Yeah.
You know?
But that I think that's a merit to the hardcore title, you know?
I think so, because it, like I said earlier, it was guaranteed fun.
Yeah, and even WCW wanted to have that guaranteed fun, so they tried to do it, but it, you know, it didn't work.
Because they're WCW.
Right.
And when they're playing catch-up, they're not that good.
Yeah.
You know, when they're leading the way, they were very good.
Yeah, when they're innovating, they're good.
Yep.
But, you know, but the hardcore title was innovative.
I thought it was. I thought it was fun, and it would be out of place now, obviously.
You could imitate it all you want, but you can't duplicate it.
Yeah, and it's a genie that's not going back in the bottle. It wouldn't have fit in any other era, really.
Yeah.
Crash Holly was a bigger star than Goldberg at one point.
Yeah.
But it was perfect for the Attitude Era.
I agree.
Absolutely perfect. Yeah. It encapsulated, you know, everything that the casual fan liked about the Attitude Era.
You just turned on the hardcore matches and you were like, this is great.
I liked it a lot. I always liked when that title was on the line.
I think it's the most transfer of ECW we got in WWE that actually worked. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess so.
Like, as, like, the pure match types that ECW was in WWE. That's what I mean.
No, that's fair. Good pick, Quinn.
Yeah.
Very, very nice pick. Yeah, I liked it a real lot.
Yeah.
We agree on that one.
Yeah.
Well, it's time for our next segment, Quinn, and this is one of my favorites.
Mm.
And as we near the end of season two, I figured, in light of what you brought up last week for one of your favorites.
I know where this is going.
Yeah, you know where this is going. So I'm going to bring up one of mine, and I would ask you, Quinn, to please show the same courtesy that I showed you last week.
Okay.
In keeping this very fair and balanced.
I will try. I'm not going to make any guarantees, but I will definitely try.
As we talk about one of my favorites, folks, and that, of course, is Bret the Hitman Hart.
One of the best wrestlers of all time.
One of the best technical wrestlers of all time. I'll share my story of how I got into him, and then you can reciprocate like we did with Sean last week.
Sure.
When I got into wrestling, folks, in the summer of 94, Bret was the champion. I had only known his name from the Royal Rumble video game, as I've said a few times. I knew who that was, but I didn't know anything about him.
Yep.
I got turned on to him by watching some matches on, you know, Superstars and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I knew he was fighting his brother Owen at SummerSlam. I watched that cage match live on my 9th birthday, you know, on pay-per-view. And I love the guy. I thought he was great. I followed him all the way up until he retired.
Right.
And he was always one of my favorite wrestlers. And even as a 9-year-old, a 10-year-old, that didn't know what RSPW was, that didn't know what the star rating system was.
You didn't have that internet to kind of encourage you to show you that Bret Hart was actually like a top technical wrestler.
Right. Even though I didn't have that, I remember watching matches of his like WrestleMania 10. You know, against Owen.
Right.
Or against Bulldog at SummerSlam 92, or against Shawn at Survivor Series 92. Obviously, the infamous Razor Ramon match at Rumble 93. And I just remember thinking as a kid, you know, in a kayfabe sense, because I didn't really know if, you know, what the deal was with wrestling.
Right.
I was like, this guy is a good wrestler.
Yeah, and I think the product really did a good job of telling you that, too.
It did.
I mean,
it absolutely did.
No, because the excellence of execution is the best.
They kept calling him the excellence of execution. Sure. It's not like you didn't have any cues.
It worked. It worked, you know, and I was impressionable. I was 9, you know, when I got into wrestling. So it worked.
Well, it's just like how I was impressionable of Shawn when he won the Rumble.
When he won the Rumble. So that was my exposure to Bret Hart. He remained my favorite wrestler. I didn't follow him in WCW. And folks, we're not going to talk about his WCW run.
No, because we covered that.
We covered it already, and it's not really worth talking about. No. We're also, Quinn, I'm sure you'll agree with me, let's not talk about the screw job.
No.
We covered that as well.
Yeah, we covered that as well, and that would be a whole topic in itself. So
let's just talk about his WWF run, his most notable run, and not get into the other stuff. But Quinn, what was your first exposure or impressions of Bret Hart?
My first exposure to him, he was kind of, you know, I think he was a championship contender when I first got into wrestling. He had just lost it to Backlund.
So you saw him against Diesel at the Rumble, I guess?
I did. Yeah, I saw that, great match. Mm-hmm. Even I recognized that as a kid. And, you know, like we were saying, the excellence of execution. I got the gist. This guy is a good technical wrestler, right?
Right.
The greatest technical wrestler in the World Wrestling Federation.
I felt he was the foil to my favorite wrestler.
Right.
So the reason I never felt partial to him as much was because of the fact that he was feuding with the guy that I liked the best.
You were already a Shawn guy.
Right. And, you know, I respected him, but it wasn't like I was like, he's the best thing ever.
Okay, fair enough.
What I did like as I continued to become a wrestling fan, a lot of my best memories with Bret are the Coliseum videotapes from like 92, 93, 94.
Sure. Yep.
And he would always be kind of like the star of those.
After the Hogan era, he was,
And it was like fun seeing like, what are these weird Bret matches that are going to get dug up? And, you know, I like that he was a guarantee like good match.
He was.
Right.
If it was televised, usually.
Even if it wasn't, if it was on a tape, he was good.
You know what I mean?
Like,
yeah, sure.
So, you know, he was a consummate professional. And I did like the idea of the fact that he was international. I like that about him.
Definitely.
And, you know, as time went on, and I don't know if we've gotten there yet, when he made his heel turn, that really stood out to me.
God, what a run that was, too. And I want to get to that.
Do you want to go through the brief history?
Yeah, brief history.
Yeah.
Obviously, folks, he is part of the Hart family. We all know that. We touched upon the Hart family a few episodes back.
We sure did.
And Keith and Bruce.
Who?
And Stu, of course.
Right.
It's wonderful.
Stu, tell us exactly what you think about your son.
It's wonderful.
Why don't you go?
Yep, and this is another favorite part of Bret Hart to me, but that's kind of making fun of him. But
I know, and that's fine. So, you know, he was pretty much born to be a wrestler.
Right.
Obviously.
He was wrestling royalty.
Wrestling royalty.
Did he come in 84?
Came in 84, Quinn, yeah.
But he wasn't just there.
He was in Stampede before that. That was his main promotion. Right. I think he turned pro, I want to say 76, 77.
He wrestled in Japan, too. I think he was in Japan
for a couple of tours in the early 80s. Yeah. Okay. He met Dynamite Kid over there, I think, or knew Dynamite Kid, and they wrestled over there.
Tiger Mask or some shit, too.
I think
I'm
pretty sure he did.
Yeah.
So he comes to WWF in 84, I think August.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was Brett with two T's when he came in.
We always joke about that. Why couldn't they get that right?
I don't know.
Like, I don't know why it was so fucking hard.
And he was a face, and he was a nondescript face.
Right.
He did that for about 6 months or so, and he teamed up eventually with his brother-in-law, Jim Neidhart.
Right.
And that's another thing, you know, they formed one of my favorite tag teams also, the Hart Foundation, and universally regarded as a great tag team.
Yeah, I never had a problem with the Hart Foundation.
Awesome tag team.
What's funny is, even though I'm a Shawn fan, I've always thought the Hart Foundation was worlds better than the Rockers.
They are.
Like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's just, that's the way it is.
I agree with you. I'm not even being biased. I mean, they just are.
Yeah,
they're a better tag team.
It's a better tag team. To me, it's a better mix because they're both not alike.
They're not the same thing.
We've got a technical guy and a powerhouse.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like, it works.
Right. They weren't the same thing. Like, Sean and Marty were interchangeable in the early
days. Right. And that was considered an advantage in its own way.
Right. Exactly.
But the idea of opposites being together also was the Hart Foundation's strength.
Yep.
So.
And of course, they were heels, Quinn.
Right.
They had several years as heels.
They were great as heels. I think Brett,
he gets
remembered as a big baby face, but he could heal it up when he wanted to. Like, I always think of that time when the Hart Foundation was going to hit Miss Elizabeth.
Yeah, they were helping
Honky hit her or whatever.
Sure.
They were pretty dastardly.
Oh my God, they were such assholes in that match.
And I liked when Brett had the shitty sunglasses.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he looked more evil.
Yes.
And did you notice when he turned heel in the late 90s?
He stopped wearing the Hitman shades?
And he had the, like, old school, the aviator shades.
Yep,
yeah.
He did. So the Hart Foundation was a heel tag team. They eventually adopted, of course, the famous pink tights.
Right. And that was to be assy at first.
Yes.
It wasn't to be popular.
No. Yeah. And they had the all pink shiny tights.
Right.
That's how that started.
Yep.
And that was like intentional. Like, we're going to look like really obnoxious assholes.
Right.
And it
worked.
It stuck.
And they had the Mouth of the South with them.
Jimmy Hart, which no one liked.
Yeah.
You know, why would you like him?
And his name is Jimmy Hart. Henceforth, they were the Hart Foundation. It just all worked.
It
they
kind
of lucked out with that one.
They did, because Neidhart happened to be his brother-in-law. And how does his name happen to be Neidhart?
Yeah, that's... Okay, I always thought that was weird. Like, I was like, is he Nide? Like, his last name was Nide, and like he adopted the Hart. Like, I could never figure it out, but that's just a coincidence. Isn't that so weird?
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
I thought his nickname was Anvil Nide.
Yeah, I thought his name. I thought his real name was Jim Nide. I'm not kidding.
And you thought they just added Hart on?
Yeah, because he married his sister or whatever, and they just to have continuity.
Right.
I thought it was more like Jim. Neid dash Hart is
what
it should have been.
Like, that's funny.
Jim Neide Hart.
Neide Hart.
Yeah.
So they were a great tag team. They turned face in 88.
Right.
They went on to feud with teams like the Rougeaus and stuff like that.
Killer Bees.
Yeah, they had some good feuds. They had some good matches. They had some matches with the Rockers.
Yeah.
When both teams were face.
Yeah, most notably, they feuded with Demolition.
Demolition.
That was their big one that put them over.
When they won the tag titles back from Demolition at SummerSlam
time,
90,
yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah, and not to say that when they won the tag titles initially from the British Bulldogs,
that was, cool.
That was a big deal too,
yes.
But it really felt like this team is like,
all-time
these are number one
team.
Kind of guys, you know what
right.
I mean? Like,
yep.
That was just a fantastic match with Demolition. Two out of three falls, if I
Two out of three falls,
recall. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And then, of course, they lose him to the Nasty Boys at WrestleMania 7.
You know what it is? It's like, I think the Nasty Boys were kind of shitty.
They
like,
were shitty. I never liked the Nasty Boys.
A lot of people like them in retrospect.
They're sloppy brawlers.
You know what? Maybe we hate the Nasty Boys more because we hate Brian Knobs.
I don't like Knobs at all. Yeah, I like Sags. You like Sags. I'm fine with Sags.
Maybe that's why we hate it. I don't know. Maybe one day I'll go do a retrospective, see the Nasties before they were WWF-ized. Because that's
that,
what I,
yeah, you know what? Yes.
Like, I want to know, like, what was the deal with those guys? Like, what made them noticeable?
I think in the 80s, they were kind of cool and they were standouts. Yeah. But back to Brett here.
Yeah.
So, of course, his first big singles push, finally, you know, he had a couple of failed ones in the 80s.
Yeah, that was always unique to me, too. If we're talking about Brett here, it's like that failed singles push.
In 88 and 89,
to me, that's
yeah.
interesting, actually, it that is. they went for it that early.
Yeah, they did. They were like, let's try this out.
Yeah, they recognized that he was good on his own.
He was. And so he beats Kurt Hennig, of course, for the IC title.
Right.
Drops it to the Mountie, which we talked about with Scott briefly.
That was, he was just sick
contract,
or something.
They contract were, negotiations.
Oh, contract. Yeah, right. I always think sick because they say it
fake,
on the show. Yeah.
But then, of course, he beats Roddy Piper clean at WrestleMania 8.
That was impressive.
And that was a great match.
Because Roddy the Piper never loses. Ever. Is there there's a short list, right? Has he lost to Jacques Rougeau because everyone won't job to him for some reason?
I don't know, Quinn. So then, of course, the Wembley Stadium against the Bulldog. Brett drops a title.
Right. And that's Brett's ascension to the main event.
Yes, he drops he drops title to Bulldog. He wins the title from Flair.
Yeah, and I've read that the Bulldog match was Brett politicking, essentially, to get a, you know, to get into the main event, essentially, right?
I don't know if that's true or not. The plan was always to get the IC title on Sean.
Right, but I'm saying Brett was putting himself in a position to be pushed to the main event.
I mean, it's possible. I don't doubt it, but I know that Sean was always the next IC champion. Bulldog was a transitional champion.
Oh, yeah, no, I totally understand that. I have no debate on that. It's more,
I think Vince probably wanted to put Brett in the world title scene if he's going to put the IC on Sean.
Okay.
I mean, honestly.
I thought Brett pushed for it more than Vince did.
I wouldn't doubt it, but I don't know. So anyway, so Brett wins a world title and he adopts the gimmick of a fighting champion.
Yeah.
He's going to fight all comers, and he does. He loses to Yoko with assault.
Yeah, and this is, you know, during this period also, I think Gorilla did a good job putting him over.
Gorilla, Vince did too.
I always remember Gorilla interviewing him with the hat on in front of that stadium.
The hat. I like that you bring up Gorilla wearing the hat.
Gorilla in the hat.
Oh, there you are. You're a fighting champion, Brett.
Yeah, it's like, we're going to go over some matches. And that endless string of matches on that Coliseum tape where we're putting Brett over. It's like, they might as well call it Hitman Hardem or something. I don't know.
Hitman
it's
Hardem?
Smack 'em whack.
I get it. Yeah, Hitman Hardem.
Yeah, that's not even a thing. But.
So anyway, I mean, I'm not going to go match by match and line by line here. But basically, when Bret Hart became a singles wrestler, he was, this is what I liked about him, and now we'll just get into some general discussion here. He was always treated like a crafty, cagey, tough-to-beat technical wrestler.
Oh, yeah. He didn't make no bones about it. He was rough. He was like, he looked like he was going to hurt them, hurt them to win.
Yeah.
He was going to do any submission hold it took.
Yep. He was going to soften them up.
He could also take a beating.
That's the thing. His selling is one of the reasons I really like him. Brett looked like he was getting his ass kicked.
Right.
And you felt bad for the guy. There was like Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
You know, like one of those where it's like you just felt bad for this guy.
Yeah. He was great at it. And he could, you know, that parlayed into being a good baby face, too.
Exactly.
You could relate him to the kids, like, you know, Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Bret Hart.
And he was a
sorry. That was a funny. Cheap shot.
What is it you want most for Santa to bring you this year?
Well, I want you to bring for me most. I want you to bring peace and prosperity to everybody everywhere around the world.
No, that's not Brett's fault. And he was a smaller guy, and he didn't rely on power. He didn't rely on... Mm-hmm. That's the thing. He was so different from your Hogan's, you know, and stuff like that.
He was a drastic departure from what they had at the top before.
He did wrestling moves, and he did a lot of them.
Yeah.
Now, I want to address this, because I know one of the biggest criticisms levied against him is the five moves of doom. I want to just say, shut up, because here's why. That's his finishing sequence. It's not the only fucking five moves he did.
No, I mean, he, you know, I thought he was an innovator with that whole roll from the top thing
he
or whatever.
He did all sorts of different moves and stuff.
Yeah, he would do all sorts of stuff, and he'd work on the leg in different ways, you know.
And the psychology between the five moves of doom was that he is going to throw his best stuff at you towards the end when he thinks he has you beat.
You know what I do like about Brett? He's one of the only guys to do, you know, like a leg finisher kind of thing, but the big but is that he's actually aware that it's hurting your back.
So
he'll work on it.
Yes.
And nowadays, when someone does the sharpshooter, they're working on the leg so much. I'm like, that's not what this move does.
The leg part of it is just to make it harder to get out of.
Right.
It's basically a Boston crab.
Yeah, if you want to make the sharpshooter hurt more, you want to like hit them in the back a lot. Like,
so like one of the Brett's five moves of doom, so to speak, which I think Scott Keith actually coined that, right?
I think so. Maybe we'd have to ask him, but
was the backbreaker.
Yeah.
He did the inverted atomic drop to fuck you up and leave you prone so he can give you a bulldog or a Russian leg sweep.
Even the atomic drop was deliberate
lower back.
It all works.
Russian leg
sense.
Sweep. You land on your neck and back.
I think the reason the five moves of doom partially are recognized so well is because they make so much sense in the context.
I guess, but people think that it's like lazy, but like it's no worse than the Hulk up big boot punches and all that shit.
Okay, if we're going to approach wrestling in a more real manner in this case.
Like Brett did. Maybe a little too real.
Wouldn't you use what works?
Yes, exactly.
Like, it's like, I know these moves work on these guys.
Uh-huh.
Like,
that's the
whole
point.
I'm going to do these moves, and I'm going to hit my sharpshooter, and I'm going to win.
Right.
And that's why I'm the best.
Yes.
Like, that's what... It makes fucking sense.
Yes, exactly. It makes sense, and it's no different, like I said, than the Hulk up, the three punches where Hulk's, like, invincible.
Yeah.
And the big boot and the light. It's better than that, because it makes fucking sense.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I mean, I think it's a stupid criticism also.
I do, too.
Yeah.
Because it's not all he did. Watch a Bret Hart match. He almost never wrestles the same match.
Mm-hmm.
He does all sorts of different shit.
He does a lot of stuff.
In fact, a lot of times he doesn't even win with the sharpshooter. He'll find a clever way to pin you.
Yeah, he would roll people up. I used to like that he would actually finish people up with a small package sometimes.
Small package, he won the title from Diesel in 95 with a small package, right?
Right, yeah.
Against Piper, he reversed a sleeper by flipping off the turnbuckle.
And I think this goes to another point about Brett. He was good at telling a story in a match.
He is one of my... You know what? He's the best in my opinion. I'm sure there's some...
Sean is good, too.
Sean's good. I'm sure there's some guy whose last name ends with Ishii in Japan that's better, but fuck him.
Well,
okay?
There is an Ishii in Japan, but it's not really a storyteller.
I know, Quinn.
Sorry, just being exact here.
Right, but we're talking about North American wrestling here, okay? Intercontinental wrestling here.
Right.
Bret Hart had some killer psychology.
Oh, yeah.
Everything he did made sense. Mm-hmm. Everything that was done to him made sense.
I think a match that gets overlooked as far as storytelling is his first match with Diesel, I want to say.
King of the Ring 94?
Is it that one? No, the Royal Rumble one. I'm sorry.
That was great.
That one's a good one. Where he's like underdog a lot.
He's the underdog, and he's doing everything he can to make Diesel look good, too, by the way.
Right, yeah. There's also that, and obviously the Owen Hart match.
WrestleMania 10.
Stands out, yeah.
That is, and I've said this, that is my favorite match of all time.
I know it is.
I've never seen one like it.
It's good? Because the storytelling's good.
Storytelling is fantastic.
It's got a pre-story with the whole Owen thing. The story of the match is interesting.
Yes.
I love that Owen counters his move that he used on Piper from WrestleMania 8.
Yes.
That's good storytelling.
There's all sorts of stuff going on in that match that, you know, people look at Brett and all they think now is, you know, Triple H, 4 out of 10, and all that shit.
I thought it was mediocre at best, and maybe a 4 out of 10 or 3 out of 10.
Fine. That's okay. I get it. He has said some stupid things.
Now, here's
the
thing.
He is full of himself. Let me just admit this. He is full of himself.
Yeah, that's fine. But I'm going to defend him here. You're going to be surprised.
Yeah, I am.
I think he has the right to say that stuff because he was so fucking good.
He really was.
Like, if anybody should be, like, making judgments on matches, it's fucking Bret Hart.
He did bring it a lot of the time.
Yeah.
I mean,
this day when he watches the matches, he can actually say, that's wrong, don't do that, do this, and he knows what to do instead of that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And not like he's the only one, but he is one person that can say that kind of stuff.
If there's any guy that should be working in the performance center, it's fucking Bret the Hitman Hart.
Right, I know.
He can help anyone be good.
He had great psychology, he knew how to do things in a way that they mattered.
Right.
It wasn't, and this isn't a knock on Cena, okay, so I don't want to, but it wasn't just like, do your shit, stand around, and do your shit again.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
and he wouldn't redo a spot like these guys
do. Everything Brett did had a purpose.
Right.
That's one of the reasons I love watching his matches.
Too.
And he was safe.
Yeah.
And it looked real with him. His selling was good. The way he did moves looked good.
Right.
And here's one thing I wanted to also bring up here while I'm on the Bret Hart tangent. I've heard people say, and I agree with it, that, you know, when it wasn't televised or if it didn't matter, he dogged it. Fine, I get it, but you have to remember something, folks, and Quinn, I think you'll actually back me up here.
Mm-hmm.
When you're on the road...
this is where I was going to defend him, too.
250, 300 days a year.
Yeah, what?
And your job is to do this every night. If you can honestly say that you put in 100% effort at your job every single day, well, then you're a better person than I, and you're a better person than Bret Hart.
Well, first of all, nobody works this much in a normal job anyway, like, and beats their body up.
Yes.
I mean, with the match quality Bret was doing on pay-per-view,
which
and
is
Raw
when it actually did matter, and sorry.
When it did matter, you can't be putting a toll on your body every house show.
Exactly.
I look at it that as it's smart.
Yeah,
it may
I do
not
too.
Be great for like fans going to house shows,
no.
But I mean, even Bret would still bring it on, like when he was younger, he would bring it a lot on like stuff that wasn't.
Correct.
Like I said, those Coliseum tapes and
yeah.
Even some of those house shows that
sure.
are on the network now.
Sure, exactly.
Like a big Madison Square Garden show.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't expect him to bring it in like Fairfield, New Jersey or something.
In front of 800 people.
Yeah, exactly.
On a Thursday when he's just wrestled the night before or
which
had a
is,
flight.
Which is probably happened because
do.
Back then the WWF was like in high school gym. So, you know what I mean?
That's
I don't
true.
Expect Bret to bring it in Sayreville High School gym.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Just get an adequate match out of him. Let him go the hell home or to his next match or whatever.
Right, right.
It's just different. I mean, pay-per-view and TV is where the money was at and where the most people were watching.
Right.
Now, that's not to say you should suck every time, but I get it. I mean, dude, if the guy, you don't know what he was through the night, any of these guys, I don't even criticize Haku for doing this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Let's put it this way. You know, Bret did it right when it mattered.
He did.
And
he brought it on pay-per-view,
you know,
and
like,
on TV.
If I can at least watch a show and Bret's going to be good on it, like I said earlier,
yeah.
That's going to be a guarantee. That's all I want out of the guy in the long run.
And you think about some of these matches to wrap up here that Bret did have on pay-per-view that are awesome matches. We mentioned the Piper at WrestleMania 8, the Bulldog at SummerSlam,
mm-hmm.
Shawn at Survivor Series. That's every pay-per-view in a row.
Right. This isn't like a break or anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Rumble 93 is not Bret's fault, let's be honest.
He's good at the King of the Ring.
Great at the King. Dragged a good match out of Yoko at WrestleMania.
Okay.
I mean, for what it's worth.
Yeah.
Great at King of the Ring. Great at SummerSlam with the Jerry Lawler doink thing.
Mm,
the Survivor Series 93 thing sucked.
Yeah.
I'll admit that readily.
That was also because of other problems.
Every other brother except him and Owen.
Yeah,
and
also
the
knights that were like,
yeah,
it was like what something happened with Jerry Lawler.
Yeah,
Rumble
94. We talked about with Scott the Quebecers match.
Yeah,
WrestleMania 10, King of the Ring 94 against Diesel, SummerSlam 94 against Owen.
Yeah, you can go on and on.
You can go
but
on and on. Diesel again.
Everything
all these
in a
matches.
Row. Even when they got to that In Your House era, I remember he was always the highlight.
Yes,
it was him and Shawn. Those
him
were the
and
him
Shawn.
And Shawn shows. Like
Shawn and Jarrett, Bret and Bulldog. They had some great matches on pay per view.
Exactly.
And of course, obviously, we didn't touch upon this just briefly. Bret Austin, not only at WrestleMania 13.
No, the Survivor Series.
Survivor Series.
That match is so underrated. Nobody talks about
it. Because it got overshadowed.
Right, but the actual Survivor Series match is awesome.
Awesome, and it's totally different than the WrestleMania match.
It is, yeah, it is.
Not only that, Bret versus fucking Undertaker had some good matches.
Yep.
Undertaker!
Yeah, and this is not the Undertaker when he was, like, good in, like, after WrestleMania 20
Booger
something.
Red.
No, not Booger Red.
No kidding.
When I'm talking when he turned into Undead Undertaker again.
I
and then
do
all,
MMA.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden he was good at wrestling.
Yeah.
Like, I'm serious.
I know.
Like, he really just all of a sudden became a good wrestler.
He turned 40 and he's like, I'm good now.
Yeah, exactly. So he just turned it on. We're talking about the shit Undertaker that would wrestle Kamala and stuff on a regular basis.
Bret got good stuff out of him. He got good stuff out of Sid. He got good stuff out of Diesel.
Right.
You know, he just put on great matches. He made it look real. He made it look like it mattered. And one more thing, and then we're done with this. He gets a lot of flack for his promos, and believe me, I understand, because early Bret promos suck.
They did.
That's fine, because despite your rage, you're still a rat in a cage, Diesel.
96 onward, 96, 97, he's awesome on the mic.
Listen, he brought me one of my favorite Raw endings ever, and it's a lot of him talking.
And you're going to hear some of it right now.
Extremely frustrated over what has just happened.
This is bullshit!
Oh, we apologize, ladies and gentlemen.
You screwed me! Everybody screwed me! Nobody does a goddamn thing about it! Nobody in the building cares! Nobody in the dressing room cares! So much goddamn injustice around here! I've had it up to here!
Yeah, it's fucking awesome.
It's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome's not the word for it.
Yeah.
So overall, Quinn, obviously, you know, Bret Hart is my favorite wrestler. I believe he is your number three favorite.
Somewhere around there. Yeah. Right? He fluctuates. Sometimes I put Flair ahead of him, but
fine.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I'm not going to argue. Yeah. I'm not going to argue that. I get why Bret Hart might not be your favorite wrestler, folks. I totally understand that. Mm-hmm. I'm not coming out here and saying he is the best wrestler ever. I'm looking at it holistically. Like, I'm a wrestling fan, right?
Right.
When I watch my wrestling, I have a favorite.
You want it to be good.
And my favorite is Bret. You know, that's all.
And that's fine. Everyone has their favorite.
Everyone has their favorite. Bret is mine. Hopefully your favorite podcast is OVP, because OVP will be back right after this.
Well, speaking of your opponents, I would imagine foremost on your mind, Angelo, of course, Bret the Hitman's would be the tag team champions,
yeah,
the British Bulldogs.
You're always asking us questions. Always asking us questions. Well, let me ask you a question, all right?
Be my guess.
What exactly is a female dog?
That's not what Bret called it. It's called a bitch, is the term.
A what?
Oh, the terminology is a bitch. You're a female dog.
That's the Bulldog's new manager.
It's bad enough. It's bad enough that you gotta take orders from a dog, but you gotta take orders from a bitch.
And welcome back, wrestling fans, to our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. Thank you for being with us so far.
Yeah.
We've got one more segment to go, Quinn, but before we do that, I just want to remind you folks, check us out on the Twitter. You can tweet at us. You can ask us stuff. You can just say stuff to us. That's fine, too.
Yeah, we're always available to talk.
We respond quick, I got to say.
Yeah, we're pretty good at that.
We're on top of that.
Give us a little Barry Horowitz pat on the back.
That's right. A little, that's at OVP Podcast. Of course, you can email us at ovppodcast@gmail.com. That is ovppodcast@gmail.com. Quinn, we are other places. Where are we?
We're in various places. iTunes.
Yes, yep.
And you can leave a review on iTunes that we would be...
Much appreciated.
We'd be very in your debt.
In your debt.
In your indebted.
Indebted is good.
Is that a good word for
that's
that?
That's better, yeah.
Yeah, it helps get the word out.
And, it does.
You know, Cole Cabana, we're coming for you.
We are coming for... And Ed Bagley,
Ed
too.
Ed Bagley Jr. Yeah, that... Jabroni. But also you can listen to us on Google Play Music.
Yep.
Stitcher. FM player.feet, yep. Whatever it is.
Gorilla's gone, so.
Gorilla. And Blueberry.
Yeah, Blueberry.
Yeah, we're everywhere.
We're all over the place. OVPpodcast.com, of course.
Yeah, OVPpodcast.com, the website.
YouTube. Not Daily Motion.
Yeah, and we got email and all this.
And yeah. We're not on MySpace yet, right?
Yeah.
We will be, though. I heard a rumor.
I'm not going to make any guarantees.
Okay. Well, folks, this is a time to review something, Quinn. We're reviewing something.
It's that time.
We watched WWF Shotgun Saturday Night.
It was interesting.
As
I always say, it was a show.
It was a show. Yeah. It happened from February 2nd, 1997, or February 1st, excuse me. Now, what was Shotgun Saturday Night, if you weren't familiar with it? Basically, what it was...
ECW, basically.
It was WWF's attempt at doing something ECW-esque. First of all, they succeeded because I couldn't fucking find it anywhere.
Yeah, it's just like ECW. You gotta go through, like, VHS tapes and, like, trade with nefarious people or something. And it's the same way with a YouTube search. This is like the modern day version where you're looking on weird fucking places.
We couldn't even find it on YouTube.
We're like, we want to watch Shotgun. Where is it? And like, you know, we looked in the various providers, but you know, they were all not these kind, the one where they were in the weird place.
Yeah. And like, not only that, we wanted to watch one of the ones from when they were still in nightclubs and stuff like that. And that was hard.
Yeah, that was actually hard to find. So if Richard Land, maybe that could be a little pet project.
Yeah.
You know?
Get some old Shotguns up, Richard, if you're listening.
Just the nightclub ones, because none of the other ones matter after that.
The first, like, four or whatever it was.
Well, we'll go into the setting here.
Yeah, the setting. So basically, folks, this is their attempt at doing the ECW thing, but I want you to bear in mind, this is before Raw became Raw is War.
Right, this is
Titan
early
Tron
97.
And all that. This is February.
Now, this is post Pillman's Got a Gun, so we're kind of in...
Yeah.
Would you can say we're in the pre-Attitude Attitude Era?
That's what you and I always talk about, the pre-Attitude Era. Yes.
We coined that term?
Yep, they were like getting an attitude.
Right.
They're adolescent era.
I wouldn't say they had it just yet, but they kind of have it.
They were getting it.
We're right before Brett said this is bullshit.
Yep, we're right before that, like we heard earlier.
Yeah.
So what's
the frame of time frame we're in?
Exactly.
The frame of time frame.
Frame of time frame. Yeah. Now, I noticed when this opened, there's an NY55 logo on the screen.
You know, that brings up a good point.
Yes.
And you had said it's hard to find.
It is. I never saw it when it aired.
I remember that this was on some weird fucking syndicate at the time.
Yes.
In my area. And that it was so hard to find, and I even stayed up, and I remember, I think I stayed up once, I, like, begged my dad, mm-hmm. and, like, I looked, and I couldn't find it, so I just kind of used it as an excuse to stay up, but, like, yeah, like, I was, like, so excited for it, and then I go searching around on the TV, and it's not there.
Yeah, same here. Quinn and I were both from Jersey, but before we went to middle school together, we lived in different towns.
Right.
So we actually had different cable companies, I think, yeah. for some of it, anyway.
And especially because it was on Saturday, I'd be at my dad's, and
right.
he got the Philly stations,
right.
because he was, like, in central, or lower,
south,
lower,
central.
South central, lower Jersey. Central Jersey.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And this was a syndicated show, like Quinn mentioned. It wasn't on, like, USA Network.
Right.
It was whoever the fuck would pick it up.
Yeah.
It was, whatever time they wanted to put it on.
What is even New York 55? I'm serious. Is that a Fox affiliate?
I think it's a Long Island.
Oh,
I don't know if it's Fox or if it was, like, independent.
Well, the logo looked foxy. That's
Indian.
Why.
Foxy.
Foxy lady, right?
Yeah. So we get the open, Quinn, and we're outside with none other than Todd Pettengill.
With a goatee.
With a goatee.
He looks badass.
He
does. This is the best Todd has ever looked.
He does.
I'm not kidding.
Crew cut, no mullet.
Yeah. Now, his hair is verging into the early Michael Cole territory, but he still looks good here.
He looks good here.
Looks hip.
He looks a little hip. Where we are, folks, is the Mirage nightclub in New York City,
which is tiny.
It's very tiny.
Yeah.
And we get a clip of Ahmed from the first Shotgun, which was only like a month earlier, doing
yeah.
the infamous Pearl River plunge to D'Lo Brown.
On top of a car. Yeah.
And then we get a nice little interview with Paul Bearer and Vader outside. And
now, this is a little funny. So,
yeah,
first of all, Vader's like in like a white hoodie.
Yeah.
And he's like digging through the trash for some reason. Like, not explaining. Paul Bearer just looks perplexed, but he's still dressed as Paul Bearer,
yes.
even like outside in like the street of New York.
At midnight.
Looks like, yeah, he looks like an idiot.
This was live, by the way.
Yeah. And then, out of nowhere, Mankind saunters across the street from an alleyway and almost gets hit by a car.
And he's got a jean jacket.
Yeah, he's
on.
Got a jean. He looks, okay, this is very interesting. He looks like the later version
yes,
of Mankind because he has sweatpants on and sneakers.
Yes, he does.
White sneakers.
And he's got his mask on,
and
too.
And he's got his mask on, but with the jean jacket from, like, ECW.
Yeah. So we cut to the big, like, I call this a big 1990s New York City intro, right, Quinn?
Yeah.
Lots of clips of New York and construction workers.
And Taker looks like Biker Taker in
yeah,
the
what
intro.
The fuck was
that?
That
was really
that was weird.
It literally, with the bandana, sunglasses, hair back.
Yeah,
like,
weird.
Exactly.
So we open the show. It's hosted by Vince McMoo.
Yeah.
And Sonny.
Ooh, Sonny. This is good Sonny.
A young, spry Sonny.
Young, spry, not too drunk Sonny.
Exactly. And we open with our first match, which is the aforementioned the man they call a hoodie wearing Vader.
Yeah, there he is versus Ahmed Johnson.
Yep. Now, Vader still has his white hoodie on when
yeah.
he comes to the ring.
So good continuity, by the
yes.
way, because they definitely filmed that, you know, probably a couple minutes
yeah.
before this
right.
aired.
A little earlier.
Yeah, a little earlier, at least when it was dark.
Mm-hmm.
They could have filmed it at like, what, it's the winter, so they could have filmed it at like 8 or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, exactly. But he's still got the white hoodie, dressy
yeah.
hoodie on.
Yeah.
And Quinn, you mentioned to me the lighting is so shitty during the entrances.
Yeah, you can't see anything. Like, it looks like they're walking through a crowd, and there's even security guards surrounding them, like it's UFC or some shit.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
The entrance is very narrow.
Very narrow. We're
in
a nightclub.
There might not even be an entrance. They might just be moving people out of the way.
Yeah.
I'm serious. Like, I didn't see a distinct entrance.
You're
ever.
Right. I didn't know where they were coming from.
Yeah, it was very weird.
So Mankind charges into the broadcast position, and he says, "I like how this headphone feels against my missing ear.
I like how this headphone feels against my missing ear."
Mankind was great back then. Like,
he
like really got it. Like,
he
it was
it.
Like,
it's Mick.
Yeah, you know, my gimmick is that I'm deformed, and, you know, I should be talking about how this headphone, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that was smart. He also says to Vince, "He's the man you call Vader, but he's the man I call friend."
Yeah. Sonny acts like Mankind really smells.
Yeah,
she keeps doing this, by the way,
yes.
as the show goes on. So I had said this. I guess we'll touch on this now.
Yeah.
I said it later in the show.
Yeah.
But Sonny acts like a young mother. the way she talks.
Her cadence.
Her cadence, meaning that she's still, like, hip, right?
Right.
But she tries to, like, mask everything she's saying if it's bad. Like, she'll be like, you stink butt or whatever. Like, you know what I mean? Like, she talks the way your mom would talk to you when you're a kid, right? Like,
yeah. Oh, my God, I hope he doesn't want to get distracted tonight. I don't know if I could take it.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, and in the midst of all this, Ahmed enters with his 2x4. It's that era, Quinn, where Ahmed always had a 2x4.
Yeah.
He was like Jim Duggan all of a sudden.
Yeah, he was feuding with the Nation.
About? Yes.
I really hated this Ahmed Johnson, just as an aside.
Yes.
And you know what? I kind of liked him when he first came in.
So did I.
And then he becomes this, like, I don't know, he's just picking a fight with the Nation. Like, they wanted to be his friend. Don't you remember that?
Did they?
Yeah, they offered him a spot in the Nation. They didn't do anything to him.
No, Farouk kicked him in the back and broke his kidney or something.
That was after he didn't
Gladiator
accept it.
Gladiator Farouk. No, that was early. That was debut. Farouk's debut, he kicked him.
Okay.
Anyway.
Sorry, I misremembered. I don't remember Gladiator Farouk. I don't have...
No one should.
I mean, I remember him. I remember Sonny managed him, but I don't remember, like, he was around for like a week.
Basically.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned to me, Quinn, and this is a good point. You mentioned the security. When Ahmed comes out with the security, it looks like he's got the Nation of Domination with him.
Right.
It's
funny. Really weird. Like, he does look like Nation. I thought for, didn't I ask you?
Yes.
I was like, was he in the Nation at this point?
Right,
I'm like,
right.
No, he isn't.
And so Vader takes a chair from the broadcast table.
And this is where it gets... Yeah. Already different because, like, chairs, what?
Yeah. Mick is awesome on commentary. He's like, we are not the Nation of Domination.
Yeah,
that's what he says.
You know what's funny? He's already, like, having those, like, Mick Foley isms where he's like, he's a nice guy in this, like, setting of, like, chaos, and he, like, doesn't, we're not the Nation of Domination.
And, you know, the match hasn't started yet. I swear, and Quinn, you can corroborate here.
Yeah.
These entrances have taken, like, 5 minutes.
Yo, this show is short.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. It's very short.
It's 1 hour.
This opening takes fucking forever.
Yes. And this is 1 hour, and unfortunately, no commercials on this YouTube.
No. We can't
Sorry.
Report on that.
We can't report on the commercials. But anyway, this is interesting, Quinn.
Yeah.
Because it's 1997, and they're trying to be edgy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On the on-screen graphics, they have these quote-unquote witty subtitles under their names.
May I read them? Because I was really into
them. Go ahead.
So, the first one, Ahmed, comes out. First of all, it just says Ahmed. It doesn't say their last names or anything. It says Ahmed, and it says, scares Mike Tyson.
Ha ha ha.
And then Vader's come out, and it says... Can't wait for the OJ verdict.
Really funny.
And this is the first OJ reference because they reference it again in another one of those witty lines.
God,
what, was somebody watching the trial that day or something?
It wasn't even like, it was the civil trial going on. This is 97.
Well, they want it to be hip. You know, Vince being hip is like, he's sick. This is in the time when Vince was like 6 months behind instead
right.
of 4 years behind.
Good
so
point.
This is like really new for him.
Good point. Good point. So finally, the match starts. And I noticed, Quinn, you noticed too, there's yellow ropes on the ring.
Yeah, it looks literally exactly the same as NXT with the black mat, everything.
It's very true.
It's the same fucking thing. Like, it's just in NXT in a nightclub.
Basically. Like. And Mike Chioda is the referee.
Yep.
So basically, we get a bunch of punching. Literally, this match so far is just a bunch of punching.
Yeah, okay, so this is interesting to me only because one of the common complaints about matches, if they're bad, is that there's punching. But this is one of the first times I've noticed literally zero moves for like an extended period of time, like a long, long time. It's punching, and a little bit more punching.
And then, Quinn, you said, this is the worst match ever.
It might be. Like, I'm serious. There was only wrestling move at like the very end. I think the first wrestling move in the whole thing was an Irish whip.
Yes. We basically get some punching and then a couple of stomps by Ahmed.
Now we got some kicking, some variety.
And then a jumping punch.
Yeah.
And then finally, like you said, Quinn, our first wrestling move is an Irish whip into a spine buster.
This is 10 minutes into this show, I feel like, the first wrestling move happens.
This is how
the entrance is, and then the punching, and then we finally get an Irish whip and a spine buster.
So the Mankind wanders into the ring, and then, of course, we go to commercial.
Did they?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
We come back from commercial inexplicably, Ahmed is just down.
Yeah.
Vader is just like dicking around over him.
Yeah.
And then this is the best part, because we mentioned Mankind's outfit, right? The green sweatpants, the jacket.
Yep.
He says he's in his Sunday best, and then Vince is like, this is Saturday.
Yeah, which I disagree with Vince, because this aired at like midnight, so it is Sunday.
But Mankind's like, well, I'm not going to change tomorrow. Mick's just awesome on commentary. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure everybody's drinking.
It sounds like everyone's got like a drink or two
even
in them.
Vince.
Yeah, even Vince.
Like, Vince is very loose during this.
Yeah, they're in a fucking nightclub.
Yeah, but what's funny is Vince is very loose, but I do notice in the background at one point, he's still, like, hip Vince is Vince wearing jeans, but with his, like, jacket.
Blazer
jacket on. Like, that's hip Vince.
Yeah, it's hip Vince.
Mid-90s hip Vince.
Quinn, you know what we have in this match?
More punching,
yeah. And then Quinn says to me, this is literally an excuse for the superstars to go to a nightclub while they're working.
Yep, it's an excuse to drink on the job at a nightclub, and it's a little break from the house show schedule, right?
Exactly. So a Vader bomb attempt, but Ahmed gets up and kicks Vader in the ass, and then more punching.
Lots more punching.
And then Mankind runs in with a chair, but Ahmed gets it and hits him. And Quinn, you notice this. The crowd is just vaguely yelling the whole time.
Yeah, this is weird. Like, I don't think the crowd's rooting for really anything. I don't even think they know what this is. They, like, came to get drunk and, like, meet women, or women meet men, one or the other, and they're like, oh, there's a wrestling ring, that's pretty unique, and they're just kind of standing around yelling. They're probably like talking and like flirting with each other,
right?
Like, and drinking. Like, that's pretty much this whole show.
It's just, you hear like, just, it's like you're in a bar. That's what it sounds,
it's literally
like
you're hearing like like, but it's loud.
It's loud.
And like, I can see why they were punching, because I said this, I made this is a valid excuse.
Yeah,
if you're wrestling a match,
right,
and everyone is loud for everything you're doing, why the hell would you change it up?
Yeah, just keep punching.
Yeah, keep punching. They love it.
Who cares?
Like, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah.
So then Mankind just goes, he like crawls back to the headset, like all funny.
He crawls back.
And then we get a promo for
Sunday morning
Superstars.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, that's when
the
it got
USA
shitty
version. Yeah. Oh, I forgot to mention the match was a DQ of some kind. I don't know.
After like all these chair shots and stuff, but now it's disqualified.
Just vaguely a DQ.
Yeah, weird.
So then we come back and Todd is with the Headbangers and Thrasher dumps what on himself?
Hot wax.
Why?
So is this like S&M? Like, is he like, oh, he's so like hip and like the kids are doing the weird stuff nowadays because it's the 90s.
Right.
So he's like dumping hot wax on himself, which, by the way, I swear there's no candle or anything, that he's literally just got like a cup of like like kind of discolored water, and he's like dumping it on him, and he's like, ooh, look at me. Is this Muggsy, what's his name,
Glenn Ruth?
Yeah, what's
what the hell are you thinking
with
of
Otis?
What?
Yeah, the guy, what was his name when he was that character, Mosh?
That's his different, that's the other one.
Winky, what was it?
I'm telling you.
No, what was it?
Chaz?
No, not Chaz.
When Beaver Cleavage?
Beaver Cleavage, that's it.
That's the other headbanger.
Yeah, Winky. What? Remember that whole thing? You don't remember?
Winky.
Winky. He's from Pac-Man. Anyway.
So, that next match.
I was saying, do they want us to think because they're crazy they go into nightclubs? Like, and all the next match is Bulldog versus Mankind. We're really like fucking this up right now. Do we have to?
No, this is great.
Okay,
we don't need to edit.
We're not editing this, Winky.
So you said to me, Quinn, Bulldog is very out of place.
Yeah, he looks weird here.
He does.
He looks so weird.
Like, Vader, fine.
So
Mankind,
he's
fine.
He's in his like Speedo with the floppy things on his legs, where he looks like the Ultimate Warrior. You know what I mean, right?
Yes, he's his Jack's, like,
season three figure. That's what you had said.
So Mankind is still on commentary, even though he's supposed to be in the match.
Yeah. Yeah, so Mankind just, he's still, he's talking, and he's almost like, I don't want to go.
Yeah.
Like, that's basically,
funny.
Like, what he's doing here.
And Bulldog is over as a face. This is during that period of time where, like, everyone liked Bulldog again, but he's still a heel.
Now, okay, so this is the moniker, the stupid shit that they write underneath. So Bulldog, it just says Bulldog, I think, and it says, just got his green card.
What? Like, what?
Yeah, they're terrible.
So Bulldog finally attacks Mankind at the table.
Yeah, and then he rips his jean jacket off, which is sad because he really liked that jacket.
Yeah, I know. And Mankind crawls back to the table and says into the headset, I just want to talk.
Yeah, he's getting dragged away and he's like, I just want to talk. And like,
Bulldog attacks him again.
I just want to talk.
And at this point, I noticed that Billy Silverman, the WCW ref, is the
weird,
ref here.
Right?
Yeah, I know.
How long was he in WWF?
A few years.
Was he all during the Attitude Era?
No, he was like 90, I want to say like 94 to 97 or something like
that's
that.
That's strange.
He's not like a notable ref.
Yeah.
So a headlock by Mick, you know, at a nightclub.
You know, whatever, right?
And then Mankind falls onto this, like, stage, table thing.
Okay, I want to address this because they're like on a, table, you know, the announcers, right? But there's this, like, it's almost like a circular table next to them. But
yes,
if you look at it from the reverse angle, it's got like tiling, like it's a stage.
Yes.
But the material it's on looks like one of those round like conference tables or something.
Know.
It's very weird.
And this is where you say to me, Quinn, there's supposed to be a stripper pole in the middle, but they took it away.
When they went to the reverse angle, I realized that literally there was supposed to be a stripper pole there. Mm-hmm. And actually later there is a stripper.
We'll get to that. Yep, that's true.
Yeah.
So we get back to the ring, and then we cut away to Todd in the crowd with Savio Vega. Savio tells him to get the hell out of his face. To be fair, I would have said that to Todd also.
Just get the hell out of my face right now!
Well, I would have said it to Savio Vega because he fucking sucks. Literally, the only thing different about him in this heel turn is he has a trench coat and sunglasses. He's literally got the stripy shirt and it looks like an idiot.
What was that shirt, by the way?
It sucked.
It really
The only thing good about Savio Vega was the music's like, doo 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 doo.
His music's awesome, yeah. Like, you know, man, like, his music's great.
His music was good.
But, like, his shirt looked like Venetian blinds. He was like a fucking dentist office.
Now, he was Quang, right?
He was Quang.
Yeah, just let's bring
just
him
to
back
further
to,
make
yeah,
him
bring
sound
him back
like
down
shit.
To earth. Yeah.
So then we get a shot of Paul Bearer and Quinn. It's Paul Bearer is holding the urn that you don't like. Can
it's
you
the,
explain
it's
why?
It's the bowling trophy version where it's got like handles on it. Why did they do that?
I don't know.
Okay, here's another thing about the urn. Remember when the urn was new and it was like huge?
That was like the return of the urn.
Oh, what am I thinking of?
Yeah, the return of the urn
okay,
at SummerSlam 94.
Okay, that's it.
The big urn.
What happened to that? Or why does it keep changing?
I think Kama stole that and
why
melted
does it
down.
Have handles? Oh, right, because they had to remelt down the Kama gold back into this new urn. Okay, I remember
But
now.
Why did they need handles on it? He never held it by the handles.
Well, maybe it was because like they were like, look, we're going to make it look really good after you fucked it all up. So now it's got like deluxe handles on it. And now he's going to need the handles so that Kama can never get it back. He can hold on to it. You ever think of that? I don't think so.
Vader strolls out, like literally strolls out.
Yes, it's not like he runs to the ring for interference. He's just like, hi, I'm here. I want to. Like, he looks like he wants to go get a drink at the bar.
And he like happened to walk the wrong way and there's a wrestling ring near him.
Vince calls a kick out in the match a cool out.
A cookout.
A cookout?
Another typo.
Sorry.
I'm doing good with the typos.
Yeah.
Remember? He's like, oh, there's a cookout. Yeah. Oh, kick out.
Yeah, Vince is drunk.
We get to another cookout. Rather kick out. Cookout comes later.
And
he is. He's got to be, right?
Yeah. And then so we notice, like Quinn said, Vince is wearing jeans. And then Quinn says, I hate the Vince trying to be hip thing.
Yeah, the only time he was good hip is when he had the do-rag in ECW.
And that was ironic.
And he had the ECW championship. But he like knew he was funny. Yeah. Like that was amazing.
That was funny.
That's my favorite version of Vince to this day. Not
really?
Not the one everyone likes when he was like, get out, get out. I like the hip, like he would like dance around
the
and
do-rag.
Like he's like, I beat Bobby Lashley. Like he was like so proud of himself.
I was happy when he beat Lashley. Yeah. Sucked.
Yeah.
That guy stunk.
He was really bad.
So there's still a match going on, and it's decent. It's okay.
Let's just say this from the before we go any further. The matches on this don't really matter.
No.
At all.
They're
not good.
And that's one of the problems, which we'll talk about at the end here. But it's decent. Vader drops Bulldog on the guardrail twice while Mankind's distracting the ref, and Mankind gets the pin.
Now, this was probably the best match, actually.
It was.
To be fair to the whole show, but that's not saying much.
No, it's not. But it was the best match of the show. And Quinn, we get the piano outro music, which you really like.
I always thought this was one of the best parts about Mankind, that he had that piano outro.
I loved
it. I can't think of a wrestler before or since that had different music when he came to the ring and different music when he won the match.
I think he was definitely the first, and I think he's the only.
Yeah. And the piano outro is like, I like it because it's almost like twisted.
Yes.
And it's like
pretty.
It's really pretty, nice. But he's just caused all this destruction.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then while this music is playing, Vader and Mick beat up the Bulldog for fun. No real reason.
During the piano music.
Yeah, during the piano music. And then Ahmed, of all people. Now, remember,
Hacksaw Jim Duggan?
Yeah, Hacksaw Ahmed Johnson.
Yeah.
Remember, folks, Bulldog's a heel.
Right.
Technically.
Yeah, this is weird.
Ahmed runs in with a 2x4. We cut to chase the heels off. We cut to Todd with Paul Bearer, and Vader and Mankind wander over also.
Yeah.
And the meantime, Bulldog and Ahmed
in ring still.
Yeah, start arguing in the ring.
And we got like a split screen so we can kind of see what's happening here. And this is funny because Vince is like, Todd, turn around, Todd. Yeah. Like, he's almost directing the show. Like, this doesn't sound like Todd turn around, like, as a trying to make it exciting.
I know.
This literally sounds like, Todd, you're fucking it up, turn around.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
like, almost like Todd missed his cue or something.
Right, exactly.
So then we get a...
this is completely out of place in this show.
It is, because we go to Doc Hendricks in that... Remember that, like, merchandise living
room?
Where
his face is, like, on the wall when he had the Dickie mustache, because he doesn't have the mustache hair. Well, and he's, like, looking up. Like, I'm talking sideways in the mic because I'm doing it. But,
This is that, like, promo room where there's always the cardboard cutouts.
I remember it had this specific music, but it's not here. It was like, dee, 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 dee.
I believe you.
Yeah, it's real. You could probably look that up somewhere.
I might.
Yeah.
But anyway, we come back to Henry Godwin.
Yes.
In front of
the stripper. Yeah. I was right. I called it.
And Phineas is on commentary.
Which,
so
he's not bad. And
he's not. We'll
by
get
the way,
to him
credit to Phineas as a person.
Dennis
right now.
Knight,
Dennis Knight is a full-blown chef. Like, he's a real, like, legit respected chef somewhere.
He seems like a nice guy. He always struck me as a nice guy.
Yes,
in all
he does.
Seriousness.
I think people really liked him.
Yeah, he seems like a cool dude.
So
we get Savio Vega, your favorite, against Road Dogg, but it's not Road Dogg, it's Jesse James.
Yep.
Double J Jesse James, actually.
And my favorite music played. Yes. Well, it doesn't play.
It doesn't play.
But
that's the problem.
It plays in our room.
It plays in our head.
And we start singing it in the middle of this match.
Yes, so we get the second OJ joke, Quinn, which is that Savio Vega is an alternate OJ juror.
Yes.
Like, really?
That's what it says underneath it.
So he yells at the crowd and his mic doesn't work. This version of Double J stunk. Like, this version of Road Dogg, Brian James, Jesse James, whatever.
Yeah, it was horrible, but the music was so damn catchy.
In fact, Quinn, you say, I hope he wins so we hear the song.
Yes. Now, all I want to do is hear the song. I want to be with my baby tonight.
So that's why we're playing it right now as we're talking.
Yeah.
Because this is what Quinn and I focused on the whole time.
Literally, this match is so long, and all it consisted of was them fighting as we sung the Double J song.
It's true. Like, so, you also brought up, Quinn, remember when Honky wanted to manage him?
Yes. This is an interesting thing about all this, is that I always thought was that...
What?
The whole reason the New Age Outlaws formed is because Honky thought he was going to be a big deal manager, and he got them together, and they both stunk. Billy and Double J. And then once they were brought together, it was like the best tag team of all time.
I know.
Like,
there was some nice continuity on the commentary where Sonny references Phineas still being in love with her.
Yes, and they also are kind of playful with each other.
Yeah, they're being funny with,
like,
each other.
I almost got the impression that Sonny, like, you know, like, they're good friends in the back, but that they, like, hug and, like, all this.
Yeah, I know. So, like Quinn mentioned, we spent this entire match, and I'm not making this up, as we're watching this, we're just singing lyrics to
the
song.
We were making up lyrics.
We're like, Savio Vega really sucks. Like,
all that shit. Like, it's
maybe
so good.
This match will end.
This song
How
is so
How in the world is this so long? Doing that on the fly. But anyway, so Phineas says they got grandma out of jail after Christmas.
Okay.
He's actually funny, though.
Did you laugh?
Did
you think that was funny?
I thought it was funny. So Sonny's like, kiss my feet.
This is the mom stuff right here.
Yes, very mom stuff.
Yeah. This match is so boring.
It sucks.
It's a shame that his music's so good and he's such a bad wrestler.
I know. This match is so bad. Honestly, like, I felt like I was watching an episode of Primetime from 91, like the variety show era.
Yeah,
where they didn't care anymore.
Right.
And then next week, where's Shotgun from, Quinn?
Penn Station.
Penn Station, which yeah. Phineas misinterprets as Penn State. Now, the crowd is no longer yelling through everything. They're kind of mumbling through everything.
Yeah, while they're getting drunker as the show goes on. So
Savio wins with some, like, kick shit after 40 minutes.
No, but Savio had this sidekick thing. I always thought that this move was kind of shitty, but also at the same time, like, it looks like a good, like, wrestling video game move. Did you ever think of that? Like,
no.
It just, anytime I see that move, it reminds me of hitting square in the SmackDown games, and it would do that if you hit it three times.
Okay.
Maybe that's just me.
Maybe it is just you. So Todd is with the Waxy Headbangers, and what the fuck was this, Quinn? Mosh pukes on Thrasher or yes. something?
Is this like the prelude to Draws? like he literally pukes on him, and it happens, and everyone's all stunned, and they're like all happy about it, and then it goes to commercial, and they come back, and they show us a replay of it, but the replay's fucked up. It like cuts out when he puked on him, but they're like, oh, it's so disgusting. Like, can you believe this just happened?
Why do I want to see that? Now, so we get Headbangers versus the Godwins.
This is our main event, I believe, right?
Yes, but before that, we get more stripper.
So yeah, they're having a hard time getting Henry to the ring.
Because he's still in front of the stripper.
And Phineas has to like kind of, hey, yeah. we're having a match.
And I was just like, what the fuck is this? Like, hey, look, guys, look how edgy we are. Strippers and puking.
You know how everybody thought puking was so cool? Like, literally, you know that whole Draws thing when his gimmick was puking?
Yeah.
I thought that was stupid
when
I was a kid. And I liked gross things. I liked Chucky and all that
garbage. South Park.
Yeah, South Park.
Farts.
And I thought that was just dumb.
It was
He's
dumb.
He's gonna puke. Why the fuck that shit?
I know, I agree with you. So the bell rings to start the match while the Godwins are still with the stripper, and I'm just like, this better be quick. I'm getting restless at this point with this fucking show. We start, of course, with a headlock.
Like every match.
Way to make this a cutting edge show, by the way.
Yeah, see, this is the problem, is like, you have these, like, WWF boring style matches from the mid-90s.
Yeah.
Like, you have the...
From the mid-80s,
you have, like, the new generation era type wrestling, but trying to be ECW in, like, an ECW setting. It doesn't work.
Yeah. Like, Salvatore Bellomo could have been in these matches. You know what I mean? That's how nondescript and boring they are.
I like that you wrote this in the notes. You said, unless something happens, I refuse to take notes on this match.
The crowd is now even quieter than before.
Yes. They're getting ready to, like, go to the next nightclub.
Right. Pretty much. And Quinn, as we note that there's some hammerlock reversals and headlocks, you're like...
Yeah, this is neither the time nor place for this.
Right. Why are we doing chain wrestling in the fucking Mirage nightclub?
It's funny we're saying that, though, because at the beginning we were annoyed about the punching, but now it just seems like... stupid to not just keep doing that.
That's
like,
a good point, right? And then as this is going on, we're still singing Double J's theme song.
Yeah, it's so good. Just turn it on again.
So even Vince is starting to sound tired.
Yeah, he's probably been at this nightclub longer than the show. So
he's probably been there since like 4 p.m.
Yeah, and even, it's just, it's not good.
Now, the best part here, we get another promo for the Penn Station show next week, and they say the public is invited.
No shit, they are.
It's a fucking train station.
You can't tell them, like, I have to go to my train. No, we're having a wrestling match here. You can't right now.
No, we gotta watch Mosh.
Yeah, exactly, and Gold Dust or some shit.
Sorry, you're gonna be late to work today. Salvatore Sincere is wrestling.
Salvatore Sincere, what is the pug gonna be there too?
So this match sucks so much, Quinn and I at this point started veering into a discussion about Penn Station versus
Grand
Central.
This is true. We were discussing about how, like, Penn Station, like, they messed it up when they renovated it in, like, the 60s or something.
Yes.
That it used to look nicer than Grand Central.
And I was saying that, like, Grand Central is very majestic, you know, and I think Turtles too.
Is that true?
The Secret of the Ooze, where they
With Kino.
A little too Wrath.
Yeah, a little too Wrath.
Where they
it does have that line in it also.
Where they get the underground, like, subway station thing, mm-hmm. right? I think some of that architecture, remember how it's really nice looking? I think yeah. some of that is based on Grand Central.
Is that true?
Yeah, and I've never personally, believe it or not, Quinn, I've never been to Grand Central. I never had a reason to use it.
Me either. I'm always at Penn, because I'm from Jersey.
Penn. We're from
pops
Jersey.
Right into Penn. You don't
right
go to Grand Central.
Secaucus.
But, okay, I just want to pause this for a moment. This was this end of the show for us, that conversation we just had right
yeah,
there.
Because basically all that happens is they brawl into the crowd and the show goes off the
good
air.
Good night! Like, basically.
Basically, yeah. literally. It's like there were like 8 seconds left and it's like, ah, good night.
Literally, the way they did that and put the you know, the watermark at the bottom or whatever yeah. at the end, I thought the tape was going to cut off.
Mm-hmm.
They did all of the last part of it in literally 6 seconds. I'm
yeah.
not kidding.
Yeah, no, like, it's real. It's yeah. real.
So that was that.
Overall, what'd you think, Quinn?
I actually thought it was kind of fun, but at the yeah. end, I got a little tired.
Yeah.
Like I said, like I critiqued earlier, mm-hmm. I think the idea is good.
The idea was good because it was trying something different.
But the problem is that you still have that leak over from the, you know,
the new generation.
New
era.
Generation. Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. New
and even worse, you know, honestly, it was just like
it's kind of the mid card of the new generation, yeah. you know.
It was an interesting idea. I yeah. know there was other ones like they. I've seen some of the clips now, from the Penn Station.
Yeah, I know there's also the one where the yeah. flying nuns or something.
That's the
or,
first episode, yeah, the, yeah. which is the Headbangers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that. They only did this concept, Quinn, for a handful of episodes, and
right.
then they resorted to just taping it before Raw.
Yeah,
which diluted
then,
it.
Well, then at that point, it became like, you know,
Challenge
or something.
Yeah, it became another syndicated show. So this was interesting.
Yeah,
The problem that we both noted is that, like you just said, all these extreme outside-the-box things going on, but inside, the wrestling didn't line up with it.
Which would happen later. But
yes.
it wasn't there yet. Now, I do commend them. This is the WWF I like, where they're trying shit.
They're trying.
They don't try shit anymore at all.
No.
But this is like, we're really trying.
We're trying here.
Yeah.
You know what would have been a perfect thing for this?
What?
The Hardcore title.
Yeah. The Hardcore title in the Midnight Club or whatever
yep.
this is. The Midnight Mirage.
The Midnight Club.
Yeah, let's just call it that.
It's pretty much what this show was,
yeah.
was the Midnight Club,
yeah.
and everyone
That'd
watching it.
That'd be a
good
name for the show, WWF Midnight Club.
Not bad, actually.
Yeah.
But as far as we are concerned, I thought that was, yeah, it was different.
It was different.
It wasn't great.
It wasn't great. It wasn't bad, though.
I wouldn't
it
say.
It was enjoyable. And it's only 45 minutes or something.
It's 45 minutes without
yeah.
commercials. It was fine. But folks, we are happy to have talked to you this week about the world of retro wrestling.
Yeah.
Now, I'd like to remind you, next week is our season 2 finale, right, Michael?
Ah, yes.
It's going to be very interesting.
Full of cliffhangers and all sorts of stuff.
We're only going to talk about two things next week.
Yeah.
One of them is going to be a wrestler. And one of them is going to be a review.
Oh, interesting.
And that's all we're going to say, folks, but next week we're going to talk about a wrestler and we're going to do a review, and that's going to be the whole 90 minutes.
Yeah, it'll probably be pretty long review.
It's going to probably be a pretty long review.
So, yeah.
Be sure to check us out on the Twitter at OVP Podcast. You can email us at OVPPodcast@gmail.com. Quinn, obviously, we're on the iTunes, right?
iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. I didn't mention Stitcher before.
You didn't.
FM Player.
FM Player. Tune In.
Yeah, Tune In, Blueberry. We're everywhere.
We are.
The website, OVPPodcast.com.
.com, you know? The YouTube channel.
Yeah, we're everywhere.
And, of course, the place to be nation.
Yep.
Thank you to you guys for putting us on board.
In that place.
So, folks, have a great rest of your day, a great rest of your week, and we will see you next Monday, February 27th, to close out the month and close out season 2.
See ya.
So long.
All right, everybody, I know what you're saying. Doctor, give me the news, and I do have the news for you about live World Wrestling Federation action. Next Sunday afternoon, February 9th, at Continental Airlines Arena, the World Wrestling Federation returns live. 24 WWF superstars in 9 killer matches. Your main event, the Divided We Stand, United We Brawl match, with WWF Champion Shawn Michaels teaming up with Stone Cold Steve Austin. Big mistake. They will take on Bret Hart and Psycho Sid. Even a bigger mistake. You also see 2 title matches, plus The Undertaker against Farouk and Ahmed Johnson against the man they call Vader. And get ready for the biggest news. Monday Night Raw live February 24th at the place where it originated from, the Manhattan Center. That's right. Monday the 24th, the Manhattan Center. Monday Night Raw live. Over 30 of your favorite WWF superstars, including World Wrestling Federation Champion Shawn Michaels, will be there. Bret the Hitman Hart will be there. Psycho Sid will be there. Ahmed Johnson.
Will you stop.